I'm getting a little sweaty.
I mean, me too.
Okay.
But maybe for different reasons.
Yeah.
I love it.
The recap's taken a lot out of me. And by a lot, I mean a lot of sweat. Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie. And we're here to talk about singing and dancing and pan-Indian boys.
Depending on which dubbed version you watch on Netflix, it could be from anywhere.
Yeah, truly. Yeah, which version did you end up watching?
I watched the Hindi dub of Bahubali.
Yes.
Here we are, the beginning. Yes, yeah. I did watch the Hindi dub. I did briefly try, because I was like, if I have to watch a dub, I might as well watch a dub in English, but it was garbage, and I couldn't, I couldn't stomach it, so.
I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah.
I commend you for trying, you know?
Literally just, like, I listened to one scene, and I was like, no.
This is not it.
Not it.
Yeah.
What version did you watch?
I also watched the Hindi dubbed. Because
okay,
I was like,
so
if I'm going to watch,
sake.
Yeah, I was like, if I'm going to watch a dubbed version, it might as well be a language I'm used to listening to.
Yeah.
I forgot that there was an English version.
Yeah. And I had thought maybe the Hindi dub might be dubbed by Prabhas. It was not.
No.
Which was disappointing. So I did the Telugu version. There is a Telugu version on YouTube that does not have English subtitles that I did then go and watch the scenes where he has dialogue to hear him
his
give
voice.
His performance. Because yes. I love him and he deserves that kind of attention from me.
Yeah.
Okay. Bahubali is the topic of discussion for this week. I liked it.
I also liked it.
Good.
I also liked it. There's some pretty big buts with that statement.
Same. Yep.
But overall, I found it very entertaining.
Yeah.
It was fun having a more of a connection to Prabhas now than I did when I tried to watch it the first time. Because I was just I didn't know what I was stumbling into, honestly. And so that was very cool. I definitely love him a lot. I find him very charming.
Excellent.
I actually loved all the actors.
I did too.
All did a really great job. Yeah.
A lot of good performances, a lot of good people in this movie. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you liked it more the second time around watching it. It was not what I was expecting. Like, vibes wise, it was exactly what I was expecting. Plot wise.
Yeah.
It was not what I was expecting. I was kind of constantly re-shifting what I thought was going to be happening.
To
whom and about whom throughout the movie.
Yeah, you know, I think there's something to be said for, like, having a movie that is very, very clearly a part one.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause this does not stand alone as its own film.
Yeah, no.
And
really
I do think I prefer movies that are their own contained thing with the greater plot that would extend over multiple movies, a la Lord of the Rings.
Right, yeah. Like, because you can end things sort of on a cliffhanger, like, not everything is resolved. Yeah. You're not watching through it thinking, like, I actually feel like I need the next part of this to fully understand everything that just happened in the first
one. Yeah, because, like, not only are we left on a, and we'll get to it, but, like, not only are we left on a cliffhanger, we're left on a cliffhanger in the past.
Yeah.
Which does inform our present. And I kind of forget where we left off in the present. I'm like, okay, so what's the conclusion? Because
we're kind of hanging off two cliffs.
Yeah. And it just feels like they were like, well, we can't publish a 5-hour movie.
Uh-huh.
So we'll chop it in half.
We'll chop it in half in a weird way. Because I feel like if we had stuck more with Bahubali's story or Shiva's story.
Yeah.
I watched the first half. I was very invested in Shiva's story.
In Shiva,
him as a character. Ups and downs, but
yes,
overall, most part, into him as a character. And then it was like, psych, the whole second half of the movie is about a different guy.
Yeah. And now I love him. I also love that they call him Bahu.
Yeah, Bahu.
That's cute. So I guess that's how I would distinguish them. I'd be like, that's Shiva, this is Bahu. Bahu I'm so into now. And I'm like, well, how much of the second movie is he gonna be? I don't know, because then I'm gonna be like, oh, right, I do also like Shiva. And there's a lot of names. There's a lot of characters to keep straight.
Yeah. In my notes, like, as I was watching the movie, I was just using first letters. Or yes. In several cases, first kind of syllables. Multiple. Like, I had BB, mm-hmm. I had BJ.
Yes. I was like, yeah, good for you for doing that recap. I'm glad I didn't have to do it. But psych, I'm doing the recap for Bahubali 2.
You are. Yes. You'll be fine. Okay, so let's talk through our cast. So, first of all, we've got Prabhas.
Yes.
Playing, on IMDb.
Everyone.
On IMDb, it says that his character in the first act's name is Shivudu. I never heard anybody call him that.
Yeah, I saw it.
I don't
in
know
the
if
credits.
it's a dub issue or what it is. I call him Shiva.
Yeah, I saw it in the credits, but also I think his name is also like Mahendra.
Mahendra
Bahubali.
Oh, that's his. Yeah.
Yeah, that's him, right? Yeah.
For this movie, I'm calling him Shiva in the first act, and I'm calling him Bahubali in the second act.
Yeah, because his dad's also Bahubali.
Right. Well, so that's what I'm calling him in the second act.
Got it. Yes.
When he's his dad, that's what I'm calling him.
Yes.
And then we've got Rana Dagubati as Balal Deva, who is also great. He has a talk show that I've watched a couple episodes of.
That's fun.
Yeah, I've only watched the episodes with people who I know as guests. So he had Nani on, he had DQ on. It was good fun.
Ooh.
And then we've got Tamana Bhatia as Avantika and Satyaraj as Katapa.
Yes.
Oh, this is going to come up naturally, I'm sure, but it is also a visually stunning movie. Like, I feel like that's...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and it was also directed by S.S. Rajamouli.
Yes.
Yeah. Shall we dive into the recap?
Yeah.
So, we open the movie with a woman stumbling out of a hidden passage at the base of a rushing waterfall. Really big waterfall.
Yeah. Huge.
And she's got an arrow in her back.
Yeah. Boromiring it.
She's Boromiring it out this tunnel. Mm-hmm. She's also got a baby, which Boromir didn't have, but he probably could have.
Yeah.
And she's being chased by a couple of soldiers, but she manages to hide and then sneak up behind them and kill them, dispatch them. Done. Literally single-handedly because she's holding a baby. So just with the one hand with the sword.
It's very impressive.
It is. And then she sees a village and she's making her way towards this village when she slips and she falls in the river. She gets swept away by the current. She grabs onto a branch. She's holding the branch in one arm. She's got the baby in the other. Mm-hmm. And so she holds the baby up, pleading to Shiva to let the baby live because he must ascend to the throne of Mahishmati.
Yeah.
And then she sinks into the water, but still is holding the baby aloft with her one arm.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
It is. It's a cool place to start a movie.
And, like, also, like, once you just, like, start this film being like, oh, yeah, like, there's definitely godly intervention.
Yes.
Then you're like, this is great. I'm here for it.
I'm here. Yes. I understand what's happening. Yes.
Yeah.
And then the morning dawns and the villagers find the baby and they save him from the river and the woman's body just quietly rushes away downstream.
Mm-hmm.
They find the hidden passage at the base of the waterfall and one of the men suggests that they follow it to bring the baby back to where he came from. But a woman in the group, whose name is Sangha, says that the river decided this boy was her son. And so she orders that the men close up the passage.
Mm-hmm.
And she names the baby Shiva. And we see Shiva grow up, and throughout his life, he is obsessed with getting to the top of this waterfall, but every time he tries, he always falls.
Like hundreds of feet.
Hundreds of feet. He's fine. He's just a little bit damp.
Also, I love that, like, you see him, like, not even get a running start to try to jump to the other side of this waterfall. Like, he just leaps and misses. Yeah.
That's what's going to happen, sir.
Uh-huh.
We see Sangha praying to the god Shiva that her son Shiva will start to listen to her, and she's pouring water from the river over a lingam, but Shiva does not want his mom to have to keep carrying this water back and forth, and so he rips the lingam off its base and carries it to the waterfall where it can be bathed continuously.
Yeah. You forgot to mention that first he rips his shirt off because it's such a feat of strength that he can't have that getting in his way.
How could I forget? Yes. You know, his tank top that didn't even have arms.
Yeah.
Gotta get that out of the way. Show the straining muscles.
Yeah. And then the bicep flexed off his, like,
his bicep bracelet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's yeah. gotta happen.
It's great.
Yeah. But and then he dances.
Yeah. So that's which I enjoyed seeing.
I did too, and I did. This was where I decided I was going to go and watch the Telugu, like, just to hear Prabhas, because, like, he's so charming, like you said, like, just to hear his voice coming out of his mouth as he's doing all these things, and I love the way he talks, and especially in, like, his earlier movies, he's got this, like, really manic energy that I just really like.
Yeah. No, it's great.
But yeah, so he's, like, super strong and also, like, super devout. And I thought at this point that maybe he was going to have magical powers, but I think that that's really what it is. He's just, like, a royal guy who's blessed by the gods.
But you were kind of thinking maybe Krish. Maybe there's some aliens up in this biz. Maybe or, some Jadu.
It could have been gods, the giving of the power, not aliens. But I thought it was going to be, like, a superpowers kind of a thing. But I think it's just he's a guy
and
who's
I mean,
strong.
Like, yeah, he definitely has super something.
He's super something, this guy.
Yeah, yeah. Super awesome.
That's what the cool kids are saying. I did. Yeah. One of the things that made me reflect on that my incorrect pronunciation of Prabhas' name was seeing somebody write pra and then in quotes the word boss.
Oh, that makes, yeah. In if huge we just letters, have that in our head, yeah.
He's the Prabhas. Okay, I'm done. For now. As he dances, a wooden mask falls down the waterfall and lands at Shiva's feet.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes fixated with this mask, and when he places it on the ground, it leaves an imprint of a beautiful woman's face.
Yeah.
This is a custom-made mask for only her face.
Yeah. Which, I'm like, they've got some cool stuff going on in that civilization for these cool masks when it feels like they kind of live in, like, a cave system.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about that group of people.
This is also the magic. I know, yeah, the rebels is what I've been calling them.
Yeah, because they're kind of doing their rebel thing. But then how are they making these cool masks?
These are questions I hope we get the answers to.
Yeah, yeah.
But also wouldn't be surprised if we don't.
No, yeah.
But he is inspired by this fantastical woman's beauty to once more attempt to climb the waterfall, and this time the woman is calling to him and coaxing him onwards, and we get the song Divara.
Mm-hmm. Also, sidebar, sorry.
Yeah.
I loved the music.
I was just going to tangent, which isn't even a tangent, but yeah, it's so good.
It's so good. Like, everything throughout it is so good.
Yeah. I loved all the, like, the actual, like, numbers I really loved, even the ones where the lead action leading up to it I didn't love.
Yeah.
And also just, like, the backing soundtrack is really, like, good and epic, and yeah, I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
So Shiva makes it further up the waterfall than he ever has before, but not without falling a few more times, luckily getting caught in some vines and continually encouraged by the sexy beautifulness of this woman.
Yeah, and the butterflies.
And the butterflies, yes. He finally gets almost to the top. He has to craft a bow and arrow, just casually.
Yeah, very cool.
Shoot it at a tree, use the rope to climb up, and he's at the top. Once he's there, he reaches for the woman, but she disappears in a cloud of blue butterflies. But, hey,
classic.
Classic. Happens to me all the time. So he's at the top. He's making his way through the snowy wilderness when the woman from his fantasy bursts through the trees with a bunch of men chasing after her.
Mm-hmm.
And Shiva follows, and he sees the woman call out for aid, and someone tosses her a sword. And she quickly starts taking out dudes as other people are in the trees shooting arrows to take out all these soldiers. Avantika's really cool.
She's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's who this is, and she's amazing.
She's just a warrior, yeah.
She's just a warrior, she's just really good at fighting, and I really like her a lot. Yeah, and so with her are these people who I call the rebels. And so Shiva is understandably in awe of this woman, but he doesn't reveal himself to her yet. He follows the rebels back to their camp, where we learn that they are devoted to freeing their queen, Devasena. They don their wooden masks and recite their oath. Their bodies are dedicated to their lost motherland, Kuntala Kingdom, and their souls exist only to free Devasena.
Yeah.
Avantika then asks their leader about a great warrior who might help their cause, Katapa. But the leader says that he is a slave to the throne of Mahishmati.
Mm-hmm.
We then cut to Katapa, and we see him befriend a sword trader and explain to this sword trader that his freedom cannot be bought. He is a slave to the throne until his last breath.
Mm-hmm.
And I only mentioned this sword trader because it really seems like he might come back in the sequel.
It does. It's like the whole sword thing.
We've got a friend for life, so let's see. So back in the woods, Avantika, for reasons that I'm sure make sense to her, lays down next to the river and dips her arm into the water. And some mm-hmm. fish come and are just kind of nibbling at it. I'm not sure what is happening.
I would never fall asleep with my hand submerged. Like, that's how that gets bitten off by, like, a crocodile.
A piranha or something, yeah.
Yeah.
The crocodile is probably more likely. But so she's in there, her arm's in there, and Shiva swims up and just really quickly, like, tattoos something on her hand.
Yeah.
Like, he's holding his breath for the whole time. It's fine.
Yeah, and, like, has, like, paint or something. It's very, like, waterproof.
I don't know what this
oil
stuff
paint.
Is.
I don't know.
He's just, like.
It's part of the god thing.
Yes, it must be. God Shiva is involved in man Shiva's actions here, too. But so then the rebel leader calls out to her, and so she, you know, gets up and goes and talks to him, and the leader explains that the king of Mahishmati, Balal Deva, will be throwing a big birthday celebration soon, and this is going to be the perfect opportunity while everyone is distracted with the birthday for them to go in and free Devasana.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gives Avantika this opportunity to enact this plan and, like, have the glory, but then he sees this tattoo on her hand, and he says that she is more devoted to her beauty than to her oath. Avantika says a line that I really appreciate. She starts to cry, but then she says her tears are not from cowardice, but a testament to her boiling blood. Mm-hmm. And I love that because men are always telling women they're weak for crying, and other men.
Yeah.
It's not. And that's not true.
Yeah.
And again, I think of Amaya from...
yes, Amaya from Love Island. Our emotional queen.
Our sensitive gangster, as she calls herself. Avantika is also a sensitive gangster. But so the leader agrees to let her make this rescue attempt. And then we cut to Mahishmati, where it's just, we get a lot of just evidence that it's not a fun place to be. There are soldiers that are being mean to all the people. There are people getting whipped. And then there's the king, Balal Deva. And he just casually fights a bull with his bare hands. Because why not?
Yeah.
Katapa is there too, and he at one point tries to, like, step in to help with this bullfight, and he doesn't need to, but Balal Deva says that he will reward Katapa with anything he wants for his loyalty. Katapa asks for Devasana to be freed, and Balal Deva agrees, offering Katapa mm-hmm. a sword to use to kill Devasana, and saying that death is the greatest liberation.
Well, then you die, sir.
We'd all appreciate it.
Yeah.
Katapa does not want to kill Devasana, but we see Balal Deva and his son, whose name I never wrote down, tease and taunt Devasana where she is chained up in their courtyard. Balal Deva accuses her of leaving him for someone. Oh, I don't know who.
Mm-hmm.
And says that someone has been forgotten, and she and Balal Deva are the only ones who remember his name.
Mm.
I will say I was confused at this point as to why the woman playing Devasana was an actress who is 2 years younger than Prabhas. And I was like, why did they age up a younger woman to play his mom? But now I understand.
Because she's going to be in the sequel.
Yeah. So it all clicked eventually.
Yes.
When Balal Deva and his men leave, Katapa sees Devasana collecting sticks around the courtyard. He offers to help her escape, but she says no, her son will save her. And then she explains that the sticks are for a funeral pyre, and soon she'll watch her son burn Balal Deva on it. Alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's fun.
That will be fun.
Pulling a Boromir's dad.
Yeah. Oh, God.
He's all over. Their family's all over this thing. Meanwhile, Avantika wants to punish whoever it was who tattooed her hand, and so she uses her friend as bait,
mm-hmm.
which is rude,
yeah.
and then waits in a tree so she can shoot the culprit. Shiva is in this tree, and he puts a snake on Avantika's shoulder, and she holds very still as the snake tickles her arm, and Shiva uses this opportunity to tattoo her shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he's a very fast drawer.
Yeah. And it's like a magic snake, you know?
It's also a magic snake. This whole movie is just like, it's magic, it's fine.
Yeah.
So she gets down from the tree, and her friend points out this new tattoo, and this time she manages to track Shiva down. He's just like chilling by a campfire, and she shoots at him, which is fair. They have a chase scene with some flirty banter, and Avantika eventually corners Shiva, and he asks her what is under her mask.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says he's a man, and she is a woman, and he came to love her.
Yeah, he does say that.
That's my exact impression of his read. She lunges at him, they roll down the hill, and then there's this scene.
Yeah.
Here we are at this scene, where she's fighting him off, and he undresses her.
Yeah.
And the purpose behind him undressing her seems to be, like, to make her look nice.
Yes.
But he is still removing her clothes without her consent.
It's to, like, expose her own beauty to her.
Which is never a good thing. Never a good joke. No. Not good. Not interesting.
She's a gorgeous woman.
Yeah.
As is. And, so I was, like, very... Torn's not quite the word. I wasn't really torn. But the first time I watched it, I was so fixated on the, like, this man is undressing her without her consent.
Yeah.
And he's viewing it as this, like, oh, it's fun, it's flirty, it's romantic. But she wasn't putting off any of that energy.
Exactly.
She was just like, I'm mad at you. I'm trying to attack you. Like, so weirdly, as I was watching this the second time, I tried to challenge myself on this. I was like, well, you've seen, like, The Mask of Zorro, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. I'm going to talk about that.
Okay, great. Because you'll talk about that. But, like, I was like, well, why was I so into that scene in Zorro, which was very, like, kind of similar, where they're having, like, a fight, and he's, like, flashing. But it's because all of her body language is saying, like, I would like to get closer to this man.
Yes.
And so it's like, okay, there's some playfulness here. And then in this scene, in Bahubali, it was one-sided.
Yes.
And I did not like that.
Yes, I agree completely. And that was exactly why I was thinking of Zorro, is because, she is also into him. And it's obvious. And so that's where these things work in romance, is when both parties are into it, even if there's a sort of feigned objection.
Right.
And one, even that only works in a fantasy setting. So nobody try to, like, in fiction, that works. No. Not in reality.
Yeah, no.
And I was wishing that they had the whole kind of, like, climbing up the waterfall fantasy be in some way mutual. Like, we've got enough magic stuff going on here. Why couldn't Avantika have, like, recognized him from this sort of trance that she had?
Right.
And then she could be into it, too. So there's that element of it. And then there's the added element of, you know, he puts on this stuffed, like, makeup and, like, dolls up her hair. And then she looks at her reflection and is like, oh, my God,
I'm beautiful. Oh, my God, I'm beautiful. Yeah, I needed a man to show me I could be beautiful.
No.
Yeah, because I'm all about, like, I do understand that, like, the culture she's living in is very, like, military, like, bare bones. Don't accept, like, individuality, anything like that. And so if we're going to kind of do that, like, well, this woman could choose to do these things to express her beauty however she so chooses, it'd be so much more powerful for her to do that on her own.
Yes.
Rather than have this man come in and be like, well, you look better this way, so let me do this against your will.
Yeah, and then her to be like, oh, thank you.
Right, and then he gets rewarded for that behavior.
Right, and because... Then she asks him if he really climbed the waterfall for her, and he says that he came to see her smile, which is also like, like, it's nice on one level, but then it's also like, don't make me smile. Don't ask me to smile for you, sir. But she likes it. She hugs him. But, like, I don't know. It just, it's weird. It didn't need to play out this way. And then there's more to come with Avantika that I really didn't approve of either.
Yeah.
Like, have him actually, I don't know, do something helpful to make her fall in love with him. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, well, because it, like,
be around.
He's clearly, like, trying to do the things that to him would, like, endear her to him with the painting and stuff. But had they had a conversation where she's like, you can't do that, then have him kind of, like, realize, okay, what is her love language, you know?
Yes, or what is that? And do that thing, and then do that.
I found it gross, and it's not in keeping with the rest of his character. Assuming that he's almost kind of the reincarnation of his father, which I think is maybe not a direct reincarnation, but like...
I mean, I think it's pretty... It's about as direct as you can get.
It doesn't seem like something his father would do either. Like, it just seems out of character.
Yeah, if we want to have this flirty kind of thing with them, it just needs to be consensual. And I don't feel like it should need to be said for a movie that came out in 2015.
Yeah, that was not that long ago.
Yeah. And that was far enough into the future being now, that someone should have said something to the writers. Like, maybe we should have her consent to this.
Like, Mask of Zorro did it, and that was, like, what, 1999 or something?
Yeah, we all liked that.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are some people who didn't like that, but I did. Okay, so then we get a love number, Pacha Batasi, which, despite the context in which it happens, I did enjoy this number.
I did too. Well, and now it's like, now she's fully in it.
Yes.
Which I'm totally happy with. I'm like, great. Yeah. Love it.
We could have liked everything this much.
Yeah. And I really love her skirt.
Her skirt is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I like all her jewelry and everything that she puts on. She looks amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They dance around the garden. We see that Shiva has tattoos that interlock with the ones that he gave Avantika. That's kind of cool.
That is cool.
And then there's, at the very end, a very steamy moment where he bites off her necklace.
Yeah. Well, also, so, like, she removes her top. Like, I...
Oh, yeah.
I was like, this is very sexual.
These two have sex.
For sure they do. Yeah.
They do. Here in this grassy...
It happened.
This grassy clearing.
Which, I'm going to be honest, I was surprised by.
I was too.
That they were that it got that steamy. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what else? This whole thing felt very mythological to me.
Yes.
Which I think is maybe the inspiration they were drawing on. Like, literally all of it feels very mythological.
Yes.
And I still just think, because of the time in which it's coming out, we could have just had her consent to it. And that's all.
Yeah.
That's all we
need. I agree.
And this number two was fun because it felt kind of old school. Like, I don't know a lot about old school South Asian cinema, but from what I've seen referenced in other movies, this felt very old school. Might have just been the mustache, but...
It's such a good mustache.
It's an excellent mustache. But so when she wakes up, Avantika uses a flower to put Shiva to sleep, and then she tries to leave this clearing, but some soldiers catch her in a net, and then Shiva comes to her rescue.
But they also threw that net from, like, so far away.
And the net didn't have any, like, weights on it, so it's not like she's in the net and she falls. It's just, like, the net's on her, and she's just still running with the net on her.
It's like she had sex and suddenly lost all her ability to fight.
This is also what upsets me, because it's like, okay.
Now she has a man. She doesn't need to
fight. She doesn't need to be a fighter. Yeah, we don't see her fight in the rest of this movie. And, like, I think I would rather have a movie that's just a total sausage fest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Than have a movie where a woman is this poorly represented, where she is so manipulated by a man, even though she's, like, cool and strong.
Yeah. It almost hurts more than if she just was, like, a one-dimensional sex object to begin with.
I agree with that. But so, yeah, Shiva comes to her rescue. He's a village boy, and so he knows how to fight. That was my other, I guess, the gods here,
also,
too.
Like, godly stuff.
The gods are just pulling all the strings. Always, that's what's happening.
Unemployed handsome man. They always know how to fight.
Especially in Telugu movies.
Yeah.
The hot hero always knows how to kick as many butts as he needs to at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
One of the soldiers that Shiva is fighting falls to his knees in front of him and begs for forgiveness from Bahubali. That's interesting. Then, like, 200 more soldiers come after them, so Shiva starts an avalanche that takes all the soldiers out, and he and Avantika toboggan to safety.
He literally, like, rips a rock in half.
Yeah, he does.
To get a sled. And I was like, this is wild and ridiculous, and I love it so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was so fun.
I did also, with the longer hair and the mustache, there were definitely some big Inigo Montoya vibes.
Yeah.
Which is, those are good vibes. Oh, and he's got, like, a vest. It's good stuff.
Always good vibes.
So after the avalanche, Avantika apologizes for leaving Shiva, but she says that she can't choose him over her duty. But Shiva says that what's hers is his, so her duty is also his. He promises to free Devasana for her. And then he leaves her alone in the snow with a broken ankle.
Yeah. I'm also like, that's really intense. that's a lot. You guys have been on like one date.
You have sex once and now her duty is yours? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a little like love bomb-y.
It is a little love bomb-y.
Mm-hmm. Red flag.
Who do you think you are? Jeremiah with these love bombs? Okay.
Yeah.
That's wow. Maybe how my many last Love Island reference.
How many Love Island references are we going to rack up on our Hindi language film podcast?
As many as I can make happen, naturally or unnaturally. Okay, back to the plot. So Shiva gets a horse from somewhere and rides it through some rocks. Cool. And some flames. Great.
Yeah, all horses will do this.
You ride them straight at rocks and they're like, yeah, we're going to go through these rocks. I'm not going to have any kind of reaction to it. Then he swims across a moat and he casually leaps over the walls of Mahishmati. He's in.
It seemed very easy.
It did. You have to be Shiva, like literally.
Yeah.
To do this, which is why it hasn't worked for anyone else.
That's true.
But so Devasana senses his presence and says Mahishmati can breathe now that Bahubali is back. And we see a vision of Shiva in resplendent armor.
Ooh. He looks good in that armor.
He does look good in everything. I've seen
Well, that's ever. Also true. Yeah.
It's the arms.
It's the everything.
Jim. It's the everything of that man. Yeah. Then we see a bunch of men pulling on some ropes. They're raising a 100-foot golden statue of Balaldeva.
I can't even imagine. Like, is the state of your kingdom so great that you could just, like,
100-foot
give all
statue.
The money and manpower to making this thing? I mean, it would make more sense. I mean, it wouldn't, but I'd be like, pave a street in gold, which it makes zero sense because gold's so soft, it would be It'd really bad. But... more interesting. But
that also makes it bad for statues, to be fair. You'd have to like,
that's
temper
so true.
It with something. Yeah, you know, nothing screams dictator like a man who's obsessed with gold.
Yeah, or like military parades.
Or that. On their birthday. The world is ending. It's fine. One of the men lifting the statue slips and falls, and this starts a chain reaction, and the statue is about to topple over onto a group of workers, which Balaldeva and his crew are just fine with.
Yeah, they're like, oh, it seems right to have, like, a sacrifice of 200 people.
Yeah, it's okay for these people to die.
Raise this statue. That's fine.
It's worth it. But then Shiva jumps in, and he helps get everything back on track, and the worker who fell recognizes him and calls him Bahubali, and he and the rest of the men start chanting the name. Balaldeva is very disturbed by this, and he has a vision of an even bigger gold statue of Bahubali towering over his own.
Because he's living in his brother's shadow.
Yeah.
Slash cousin. Cousin brother.
His brother cousin. Yeah. Yet again. Drink They're every everywhere. Time there's a brother cousin. He's very upset by all of this. And so he and his dad, who's also here, and his son, they decide to question all of the soldiers to see if any of them saw anyone there who looked like Bahubali. Shiva has by this point stolen a soldier's clothes. And so he's all dressed up. He gets brought in to be questioned with the other soldiers. As he's coming forward, he knocks over a torch and sets a curtain on fire. And as Balaldeva gazes at him through the flames, he says, I've seen those eyes before.
Yeah. Well, they're probably family eyes, to be fair. But also, this is why you shouldn't have a room with long, flowy curtains and a bunch of open flames.
Just loose fire. Yeah, no.
Yeah, it is not difficult to set that place on fire.
No, just set it ablaze.
Yeah, you're really far away from the waterfall, too, so...
It's, yeah, that's the only water, I'm sure. So Shiva flees, and he fights some guards, and then he steals one of the guards' outfits. I don't know exactly why, but just wanted to have another costume change.
Uh-huh. Why not?
Why not? And then he makes his way to the courtyard where Devasana is chained up. He fights off the guards using her chains, and then he just... I really like this. He just tosses her into a cart.
Yeah.
And then, like, rides off in this horse cart. So Balaldeva's son sends Katapa after Shiva, but then he has this idea that he's going to ambush Shiva in the woods. And so Shiva gets knocked out by the prince and his men, and when he comes to, the prince makes a lewd comment about Devasana running off with whatever man she sees. This spurs Shiva into action, and he starts beating dudes up.
Yeah, of course he
Classic.
Does.
Kātapa shows up and joins in the fighting. Avantika and the rebels also arrive, and they help to fight off more of the soldiers. And then Sangha and the villagers, who we had seen earlier, just like they opened the path to follow Shiva. So they show up too. They're here now. Kātapa calls to his horse, who has Bahubali's sword strapped to its saddle.
Yeah.
Kātapa grabs the sword, but Shiva jumps and unsheathes it and then uses it to decapitate the prince.
Yeah, pretty cool.
That's a
pretty cool sequence of events. Yeah.
And then they show the prince's decapitated body, like, yeah, take a couple of steps and then fall. It's like,
I love the theatricality of it.
Yes. And then it starts to rain, because this movie is The Lion King. Like, I'm sorry, it just is.
It actually, like, legitimately is. Apparently, Rajmouli, when he contacted Prabhas about it, was like, it's Lion King, but you get to be Simba and Mufasa.
And Mufasa. How could you say no to that?
You can't say no to that.
Career-defining film right there. But so Kātapa falls to his knees at Shiva's feet, and we see him as a younger man placing the baby Shiva's feet on his head, and then in the present, he places grown Shiva's foot on his head.
Yeah.
So he's clearly like, this is his guy.
I serve you. Well, I mean, the guy he served before is dead, so.
Well, yeah.
Oops.
The rain clears, a new day dawns, and Shiva demands to know, what's going on?
Seriously.
What's going on?
I also like that he's like, who's that guy I killed?
That's going to come back to bite you in the butt, I'm sure. Kātapa says Shiva is the son of their savior, Amendra Bahubali. Devasana is his mother, and he was saved as a baby by the queen mother. Kātapa explains that 50 years ago, Balaldeva's father, Bijalaldeva, was passed over for the throne because he's disabled. That's not cool.
Yeah, you can rule.
You can.
It's fine.
Yeah. But when his younger brother died, Bijalaldeva's wife, Shivagami, became the queen regent. All very complicated.
Because, like, the queen was 6 months pregnant when the king died, and it was a difficult, like, pregnancy and birth, so she couldn't do it.
Yes.
So I guess it went to, the older brother had already been passed over or something.
Yeah, so they were like, he's just fully not an option, so let's give it to his wife. And it turns out this is a good choice. Kātapa says
she's awesome.
She was a good ruler. But the previous king's wife dies in childbirth, and she gives birth to Amendra Bahubali. And Shivagami raises him and her own son, who is Balaldeva, as brothers.
Yes.
And we see her put an end to a, I would say, kind of half-hearted uprising using statecraft, because she's very smart.
Yeah, the coup also, though, felt like, I was like, what's happening? Did I miss something about this coup?
It was very fast. It ended as quickly as it started. But she says that she will not sit on the throne herself, and she will choose either Bahubali or Balaldeva to become king, based on whichever proves themselves to be more valiant, compassionate, and wise.
Love that.
Love that, yep. We see the boys grow up, and Bahubali is right away proven to be, you know, he's a good kid. He saves Shivagami from a scorpion. We see him eat with Kātapa and his men, even though they're slaves. As adults, both men are big and strong warriors, and Bahubali jokes that Balaldeva can be his commander when he becomes king.
Yeah.
But then one of Shivagami's trusted officials steals some military plans.
So maybe you shouldn't keep them all in one spot.
It's just, this is where the plans go.
Yeah.
So Shivagami sends the princes after the official, and their journey takes them to the lawless city of Singapuram. What follows is entirely irrelevant to the plot, but still fun.
Well, part of me was like, okay, maybe one of these women gets pregnant, and that's how we get. But then I was like, well, that doesn't make sense.
I was like, okay, so clearly this is, somehow this is going to relate to how they get the official, but it really doesn't.
No, they kind of just went and had a party.
They do, but the party looks like a good time. Bahubali orders drinks from the director, S.S. Rajmouli, yes, in a cameo, eventually paying for everyone in the bar to get drunk and dance with some ladies.
Why not?
And this brings us to Manohari, which is excellent.
Very good. It's, yeah.
I enjoyed this a great deal. It's a lot of just using the men as props to do, yeah, impressive and sexy dance moves against them. And I like, yeah, that.
Yes. Yes. Let's use men as props for once.
Yes. Prop bus.
Prop bus. That's good, Kim. You should call his people.
Meanwhile, Bilal Deva finds the official, but the official gets away and the princes have to chase after him.
Mm-hmm.
The official does manage to send off the military plans via carrier pigeon, and then he attempts to jump off a cliff, but Bahubali throws Bilal Deva a rope and holds the other end as he jumps over this cliff to catch the official.
Yeah, it seems like Bahubali, like, really has a lot of confidence in, yeah, his relationship with his... He's like, this is, like, a fun, lighthearted competition for the throne. And his brother cousin is like, nah, man, I want to kill you.
Which is kind of the way it would go for the person who's, like, yes, actually gonna win the competition, yes, and the one who's not.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, so Bilal Deva, he drops the rope, but then Katapa arrives, so he does pull Bahubali to, yeah, safety. But we all know he wants him dead.
We do know. So Bahubali doesn't, though.
No, he does not. He was too busy dangling off a cliff. But so the official reveals that he sold the military secrets to the Kalakeyas, a super violent army who will kill and destroy everyone in their path.
Mm-hmm.
I felt it was worth noting that these men are significantly darker in skin tone, yeah, than our heroes.
And, like, not even naturally. It's not like they cast people with darker skin. They, like, are all... Blackface isn't the correct term, maybe.
Well, what I think is interesting is it seems like they wanted it to be natural. They wanted it to look like these were men who were naturally, like, black-skinned. And I'm not even, yeah, talking, like, dark-skinned black people. Like,
no, but they're truly black-skinned, yeah.
Yeah. When I think it actually would have worked better if they had made it clear that these were people who did intentionally darken their skin. Like, it would have, well, made, yeah, it more like this is a choice that these people are
if
making.
If it were
to
actually,
like
war paint or something.
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to, like, no, these are dark, dirty, bad, evil,
yeah,
men.
Well, and that was the thing. It was like, they also intentionally don't give them armor. Uh-huh. Like, they're all, yeah, dressed in, like, furs and they're, rags that don't, yeah, really fit. And they all are acting, like, unhinged in a way. Like,
they're the barbarians.
They're
less
very
civilized.
Primitive. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And then I'm like, I don't like the choices that were made together for this. It makes me really uncomfortable. And when we get to, like, the whole them praying to their Hindu gods, which, again, I'm like, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the layer of making it seem like because they follow Hinduism, they are enlightened in a way that this, yeah, other group of people who worship something else, they're like, let's make it really creepy by putting, like, a steer's head on a spider skeleton. Like,
that thing looked rad. I would worship that.
It did look at it. Yeah.
But I completely agree with what you're saying. Yeah.
There was that layer, too. And it's hard not to, like, remember what we discussed with RRR.
Exactly. So, that's what, yeah, came to my mind, too. It's like, it's not, you can have as much Hindu imagery in your movie,
totally,
as you want to have.
Yes,
but
go
don't
for it.
Then say that because these people are Hindu, they're better inherently than anyone else.
Yeah.
Like, now we're verging on some problematic stuff.
Well, and it was just like, they had the Kalakeyas also all had, like, really bad teeth, yep, and, like, crazy hair. And I was just like, this isn't good.
Nope. For me, it immediately made me think of orcs.
Yeah.
And I was like, you could have just had orcs.
Orcs. Right. This is like a fantasy magic land.
You could have just had, like, demons of some,
yeah,
kind that they're fighting.
No one can,
like,
right.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be, like, humans who you dehumanize.
And, like, that they specifically then talk about how, like, this group of humans, they, like, rape women and murder children. Like, they have no morals or, yeah, anything like that. And I'm like, okay, we get it.
And now, and maybe it is the blackface of it all for me, because I'm just realizing, I'm like, if you keep them the same color as right. your heroes, I don't care. I don't have a problem.
Well, that's I what I was thinking of. Right. I was like, why did you even have that be part of it? Because yeah. you wouldn't have had to go to that effort. They could have literally, you could have just cast whoever.
Could have saved money on some makeup, I'm sure. Yeah.
Exactly. And I would have been like, yeah, those people are evil. And I yeah. wouldn't have like had the immediate gut reaction of...
Oh, yep. Yeah. Oh, no. Again, simple choices that could have been made to have made this movie less problematic.
Yeah.
But the problematic yeah. choice was made. So, okay, back to the plot.
Yes.
Shivagami asks what strategy they should use in battle, and Bahubali suggests they form a trident, which is untested, but that means that the enemy will not suspect it.
Yeah.
Katapa will build an iron wall with his forces before the entrance to the city, Balaldeva will attack with his force from the north, and Bahubali will attack with his force from the south. They determine that they'll have to kill the enemy chief in under 3 hours, causing the rest of the army to scatter. Bijaladeva insists that Shivagami name whichever prince kills the chief as king, which notably Shivagami does not agree to. He just kind of decides right. that this is what's happening.
Yeah.
Before the battle, Balaldeva follows with tradition and sacrifices a bull to the goddess that I'm pretty sure is Kali, even though the subtitles did not name her. But Bahubali makes a sacrifice of his own blood by cutting his hand.
Yeah.
The final talks before the battle are rough. The enemy chief is crass and threatening, so Shivagami says she wants him tortured alive before he dies.
Mm-hmm.
So the battle commences. Bahubali has devised a clever trick where he shoots tents covered in oil using the catapults, so the enemy soldiers are trapped under the flaming fabric, which I wrote was like a nightmare version of when you have the parachute yeah. day in elementary school gym class.
Yes, which was so fun. Until
it was always everyone's favorite fire. Day. Yeah, yeah. No, sans fire is the best way to go about that. But then the enemy push out a bunch of civilians in front of them as Balaldeva and Bahubali are advancing on them. Balaldeva is riding on a cart with this big spinning blade on it, and he's just like...
wild.
He's wild. And he's like, I don't care about those people. And he just plows through them, kills them, starts killing the enemy.
I was just thinking, I'm like, that contraption? It's pretty cool.
It's probably very efficient.
It does what it needs to do. I don't understand how it runs.
Maybe it's an elaborate... horse power.
Yeah, powered. Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't need to know. Magic.
magic. It's all magic.
So Bahubali pauses, and then he has his soldiers like throw some ropes with balls on the end to trip all the civilians. So they fall to the ground, and then they're able to like jump over them and kill the enemy behind them.
Yeah.
And then at one point, there's a little boy who he saves from getting stabbed with a spear, and then he chucks the spear while he's got the boy on the horse with him, and it was cool.
Yeah, that maneuver was so cool.
Yeah,
like bad guy throws spear, Bahu picks up boy, puts on saddle, grabs spear from air as he dodges it, swings it around the back, and then stabs the dude. I'm like, uh-huh. that I'm here for stuff like that.
Yes,
show me that all day, every day. I love it.
This is what we come here for, not for racism or non-consenting sex acts.
Exactly, exactly. I'm here to see a hero be a hero.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. But so back at the Iron Wall, the enemy comes at them with a really unimpressive battering ram. Like, you remember Grond? If I can reference Lord of the Rings for the fourth time.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is not Grond. This is like four logs tied together. And yet, the Mahishmati forces are completely unprepared for this battering ram. The enemy gets through, they're like onto the city soil.
And then suddenly everyone's losing. Like, they're losing by like a lot. It's bad.
It's like, oh no, the city has been
breached,
that's the word I wanted. Thank you. So it's seeming like all hope is lost until Bahubali returns to this part of the fight, and he gives a rousing speech to the fleeing Mahishmati troops. In the middle of the speech, he gets shot with an arrow.
Yeah, doesn't
this,
care.
This does not stop him.
He not then pulls, at all.
He then pulls the arrow back out. Bad decision.
Yeah,
in
totally
real life,
fine.
Fine for Bahubali. He proclaims no one will harm his mother or his motherland and asks who will vanquish death with him. Yeah. The soldiers cheer, and they take up the fight once more.
It's a good speech.
It is. This was another scene I had to go watch.
Yeah.
Probastu.
I'm like, you know, this guy's clearly the best choice to be king. I don't know why the, like, queen regent, like, took so ever. Long.
Yeah. I guess she didn't know about some of the, like, wise stuff he was doing before, but...
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's pretty clear who's the right choice for king here. So, Bilal Deva, he starts fighting with the enemy chief, and he gets knocked back, and then Bahubali picks up the fight, but then the chief chucks him... And throws a bunch of dead bodies on him. And he gets buried in the dead bodies.
Yeah.
But
when that happens.
Bahubali bursts free of the corpses a la Jon Snow in the Battle of the Bastards, which I know you haven't seen, but it's
no,
an
but
iconic
I can picture
moment.
It.
It's, it's amazing. And Bahubali's got a lion's head on his fist, like a fake one, but it's got real teeth.
From his brother cousin's, like, death
chariot. Death chariot, yeah. And so he gets in, he's fighting with the chief, and then he, like, grabs the chief by the head in the jaws of the lion thing.
Yeah.
And is dragging him back to Mahishmati.
That can't be comfortable.
No, definitely not. And Bahubali starts to carry out the torture that Shivagami demanded before the chief was going to be killed. But then Bilal Deva hits the chief with his mace and kills him instantly.
Yeah, hated that moment. But mm-hmm. that mace is really cool.
It is cool. It's, like, retractable.
Yeah, like,
at the
yeah.
same time, though, nobody but evil people use maces, in my experience.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it is a cool mace, as far as maces go.
Yes.
But I like
it's, like, a mace and a morning star.
Yes.
And, like, not just a, but also, like, a really long, like, a whip morning star.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I wonder how the retracting happens, but that's fine.
I mean, there must be, like, a button. Yeah, it just has a little pulley system.
Totally normal.
Magic.
magic, again. I like this moment because Bahubali actually smiles at Bilal Deva. Like, he...
Yeah, he's like, he did it.
Not only is he going to be a great king, but he's also like, I'm okay with not being king. And that's what you want.
Yeah.
But so everyone gathers after the battle. Bijala Deva... declares his son victorious, and nobody applauds. Like, two guys applaud.
Yeah.
Shivagami agrees, calls Bilal Deva victorious, and declares him the commander of the Mahishmati army, and
uh-oh.
Says Bahubali will be king. She says a king is made by the number of people he saves, not the number of enemies he kills.
Yeah.
Everyone cheers for Bahubali, and then we go back to the present, where we see Katapa telling Shiva that, alas, Bahubali is no more. Shiva asks who killed him, and Katapa says, it was a traitor. It was me!
That did shock me. I was assumed it was the brother cousin.
I think that's what we all assumed.
I'm very intrigued to see, like, the series of events that led Katapa to, like, kill Bahubali. Like, what was held over him that he would do that?
I don't know. I look forward to finding out. And I also, this was where I realized, I was like, okay, so we're going to get the parallel stories in part two as well. It's not like this is the end of Bahubali Sr. But we end with a silhouette of Bahubali being run through by Katapa on the battlefield, and we'll have to wait till part two to find out what happens next.
Yeah. I'm excited to watch the second one.
Me too.
I do like the storytelling, like, and this is another example of a 2.5 hour film, maybe two hours and, like, 40 minutes that really was very watchable.
I know. I feel like it could have been longer. There are things I wouldn't have minded more of. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I really enjoyed it, but I can't say I love it because of, like, the glaring issues that I have with it.
Yeah. I mean, this is so similar to how I feel about RRR, where it's like, there's so much about this that I think is so cool to look at. And also, can I say a thing, though?
Yeah.
And this is something I have been reflecting on for a couple of days, and this felt like an okay place to sort of share it. But, like, in our last episode, we kind of joked a little bit about needing an escape from reality in media. And I was having this conversation with my mom over the weekend where she was, like, telling me about some violent TV show. And I was like, oh, I can't watch anything these days with people, like, killing each other. Like, I just, I can't stomach that in this day and age. And then I was thinking about the fact that not so much in the last, like, month or so, when I haven't been watching much of anything other than pure trash and The Bear. Bear, which is amazing.
Oh, I need to watch The Bear.
Oh, it's so good. But prior to that point, and I'm sure not too far in the distant future, like, I will be consuming a lot of this kind of media, of South Asian cinema, specifically Telugu movies that involve a lot of people, like, fighting and killing each other, specifically men fighting each other. And, like, a lot of the stuff that I, like, go to and, like, rewatch constantly, like, that's a central focus. And so I was like, why is it that that is okay for me?
Yeah.
And not other stuff? And I think that there's multiple reasons, but one is that, like, the violence in these movies is so sensationalized and hyperbolic that it's just very clearly not real.
Right.
Like, it's just fake. And there is never any gray area about who is a good guy, who is a bad guy.
Right.
The bad guys are sometimes problematically obvious.
Yes. But, yeah.
It's clear who you're going to root for.
Yeah. It's like the standard tropes of fiction.
Yeah.
That even if they're violent, it's comforting. Because you're like, I know exactly how this is going to play out. I'm confident that the hero is going to be a hero and the hero's going to win and beat the bad guys and, like, get the love of his life and all that stuff. And
yeah. It's safe. Yeah. Even though it's, like, not actually a safe world, it's a safe world to enjoy watching. And on the one hand, like, those are valid criticisms that, like, it's fake and too obvious who are good guys and bad guys. But it also made me think of the fact that Lord of the Rings has become really popular with millennial women. And, like, always has been. But it's sort of, like, being talked about more that it's really popular with millennial women.
I didn't realize that. That makes me happy.
Because all of the good guys are good and trustworthy.
Yeah.
And all of the bad guys are really easy to avoid. And even though there's not a lot of women, you can watch it as a woman and know you can trust all of the men you're rooting for and feel safe.
Which you can't necessarily do in the real world.
Exactly, yes. So I just wanted to go off on that tangent because I had been thinking about it a lot and then I watched this movie.
Yeah.
And yes, it's problematic. Yes, I will rewatch it. Probably the version without subtitles that's in Telugu because I know what's happening.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Just fully immerse yourself in it the way it's meant to be watched. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will enjoy it and I will find it easy to watch because even though there's death and violence, it's very distant from the actual death and violence that's happening in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think that's fair. I always like to, like, kind of, like, dig into things like that. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. I appreciate having the space to do that. But let's get to your research.
Okay. Let's go. So as soon as the bad guys showed up, I was like, someone has to be talking about this, right? I hate to focus on the bad stuff, but when it's that obvious,
I kind of feel like we gotta
talk about it. So, yeah, my research is on the not great parts of Bahubali, which is racism and casteism.
Great.
So I read two different articles. They're both very good. Yeah. There was an article published in April 2017. So after both of these came out after the sequel was out.
Okay.
So this article was published on the News Minute called "As Rajmouli's Post on Caste Reemerges, Don't Forget That Bahubali is Castist, Racist Too." And this was written by Ramanathan S. The post that the title refers to was made by the director and creator Rajmouli in 2012 when he made a tweet that said, "We learned the caste system from Manusmriti was based on our lifestyle and not by birth. A gentleman whom I play tennis with told me a better expansion. Panchama Jati, untouchables, one who depends on others for his living." And then in parentheses next to that, it says parasite. Sudra, one who lives for himself and his family. Visya, one who makes profit for himself as well as for the person with whom he is trading. Kshatriya, one who eats after the people under him have eaten. And Brahmin, one who first learns and then teaches. So this was a tweet that he fully, like, laid out and posted out into the world in 2012.
Wow.
When development for Bahubali was definitely underway. Ramanathan, the writer of this article, writes that this post is deeply offensive to Dalits, which is actually the term that we use, given that it glorifies Brahmins and other Savarna groups and humiliated Dalits. He says it is the exact justification which New Age Savarnas use to continue with the caste system. But what is perhaps more illustrative of Rajmouli's casteist mindset is his magnum opus, the Bahubali series. Mm-hmm. In the first movie, the racism was apparent. The artificially dark skin and savage look of the quote-unquote villains clearly fit into our stereotypes of how dark is bad and dirty. The Kshatriyas and Brahmins in the movie are light-skinned people and play the heroic roles. In fact, there is a gradation in Bahubali's racism. The rulers of Mahishmati are all light-skinned and typically beautiful, and Shiva's adoptive mom is from a tribe that is brown-skinned, but they are not as dark-skinned as the villains, the Kalakaya people. The gradation is so well-planned that the language of the Kalakayas is apparently supposed to sound Dravidian and crude, according mm-hmm. to the creator. In the second movie, there is little of Kalakia racism, but then the caste glory takes a front seat. One could make the argument that this is set in an era of kings and slaves, so it is obvious that casteism would creep in the interest of realism. But that argument would fall flat for at least two reasons. One, when it comes to the portrayal of women, Rajmouli was able to remove the sexism in his cinema between part one and part two. Here I made a note that, like, I'm excited about that. Like,
that's good.
The way that women are portrayed, let's see how that changes.
Yes. I look forward to that hopeful improvement.
So if we can change the usual narratives of women just being eye candy, we can shed the casteism and racism too. Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
Reason number two, it is to reimagine reality that we have fiction, that we have cinema. We were literally kind of just talking about this.
Yeah.
A blockbuster like Bahubali is ripe opportunity for us to try and overcome our caste and race biases, not reiterate them. Mm-hmm. As we appreciate the magnificent cinema that is Bahubali and applaud Rajmouli for learning from past criticism of his sexism, let's not be far behind in calling out other regressive portrayals. And let's not set the bar low for him when it comes to addressing all social hierarchies.
Yes.
Yeah. I really like that. It sets the scene for the next article.
Okay. My feeling is that he did not learn anything between 2017 and, what, 2022?
When
RRR came out? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
He was limited in the growth he was able to accomplish. I mean, he's still alive. He could grow more, but I don't have the highest hopes.
I have a growth mindset. I like to believe that everyone can grow and change for the better.
Everyone can grow and change for the better.
It's just true. Will they?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
We don't know. Another article called The Problem with Bahubali's Casteist Supremacist Logic was published in May 2017 in The Quint by Pranav Kutaya. Pranav starts by lauding Bahubali's groundbreaking status and its ability to stand up as quote-unquote regional cinema. Here he made a quip that, like, well, why don't we call Hindi cinema regional? Because that's regional.
I was just thinking about that the other day when we did that research initially about, like, the regional.
Yeah. Right. It's like, well, that's also regional.
It's a region. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like main character syndrome. But
yes.
And announce itself as a pan-Indian phenomenon. He writes, in a country in which caste and region very fundamentally determine what gets to constitute the mainstream narrative, a Telugu movie stubbornly insisting on being so larger than life is certainly rare. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yes, it's very impressive that this was able to break that barrier.
Yeah, take notice.
Pranav then moved on to his review, saying, the first Bahubali was rife with offensive symbolism. It asserted natural orders to hierarchy and played on stereotypical tropes. But more than anything, there was something deeply pernicious about the fact that the film was originally made in Telugu and had wide releases in Karnataka and Tamil Nadu. From the fair-skinned heroes and heroines glorifying the hierarchy and rigidity of their country and defending it from the dark-skinned tribal savages, the entire film reeked of Aryan supremacy. Mm-hmm. The Kalakayas, the villains of the film, were portrayed as dark, ugly monsters, savages who did not understand the beautiful civility of the caste system. If anyone doubted that this was supposed to mirror the imagined version of Dravidian ancestors, then all such doubts were put to rest in an interview with the creator of the Kalakayas language, which is called Kili Kili, in which he states that the harsh-sounding, brutish language was modeled on Tamil.
Oh my god. I don't even have words for that. I'm sorry. That's sickening. Mm-hmm. I know what people would argue makes a language that is not Dravidian, like, less, or, like, you know, better, like, have more status or something, but, like, these are, mm-hmm. these are, like, all classic languages of India.
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
Yeah, and, like, we've watched Tamil films, and...
I love the way Tamil
I love
sounds.
The language. Yeah, like, it's just... It's like you're firing shots that don't need to be fired.
Right. It's pointing a light at the arbitrariness of these things.
Yeah.
Because I think that that's what, like, we always struggle a little bit with being outsiders to this world and, like, passing yes. judgment on it. But I do feel like when you're talking about, like, a when it's, like, a group of outsiders, like, looking at the ways that certain people have, like, ranked things in your society, and they're like, well, that makes absolutely no sense. That's
yeah.
kind of when it does feel like it should yeah. probably change. In the same way that people would, like, look at, like, the racist systems that we have in the U.S. and be like, well, why?
Right, exactly. It's like, we need people to be asking those questions.
Yeah, like, what is this yeah. actually based on? Because I think it's a problem, and you should probably get rid of it.
Yeah. But to continue this article, Pranav writes, the first film also had very poor depictions of otherwise strong female characters.
Yep.
In violation of even the most commonsensical understanding of consent, the hero strips down a fierce warrior heroine and puts makeshift makeup on her to reveal her own womanhood to her,
ugh.
Following which she obviously falls in love with him. Even when characters like Shivagami, the Queen Mother, are shown to be strong and able rulers, it is done with the reinforcement that, surprise, surprise, she also takes on the responsibility of handling two children. And while Rajmouli endows his female characters with power, he chooses unsurprisingly to locate that power not in their womanhood, but in their caste.
Ah, interesting.
Yes. Pranav then includes the same casteist tweet that we mentioned in the first article, saying that Rajmouli's thoughts serve as a precursor to the dialogue and symbolism that run through both films. This is particularly shown in the second film when Devasana must claim her status as a kshatriya, and maybe some spoilers, but it's fine, in order to justify making a bold move in the royal court. Pranav writes, to release such a film in Telugu and Tamil is nothing but a cultural Trojan horse of Hindu and Hindu nationalism, perhaps reasons for its wide success and critical acclaim across the quote-unquote Indian media and the Hindi belt. It is an attempt to teach the cultural values of some mythical Vedic paradise to the barbaric indigenous people, symbolized in the opening scene of the sequel when the hero sits on a Ganesha statue and uses a bow and arrow to destroy an indigenous deity depicted as a demon. It is an attempt to push the Aryan supremacist logic of devas versus rakshasas and fair and good versus dark and evil on a group of people that are inherent outsiders to this entire worldview. Pranav ends by writing that the Bahubali franchise is a cultural phenomenon, and not watching it is almost impossible, given the level to which it has dominated and will dominate film discourse for some time to come. Because again, this came out in 2017. He says, ignoring something so massive is only at the peril of allowing such values to go unchallenged, and so a critical engagement becomes a crucial need of the hour.
I really appreciate that being where this article ended, because I do think I kind of have these tumultuous feelings of, like, here we are using our
right.
admittedly very, very small platform to talk about this movie, but it is important
yes.
to highlight these things. And I am definitely appreciative of having people who are more familiar with this symbolism point
yeah.
to where these problems are, and something that we could feel them. And we
right.
can see them,
yeah.
even if we couldn't necessarily put a name to everything that's going on. And it really just
right.
goes to show how it would have been so straightforward to not include the things that were included that
yeah.
were problematic. Like, these were intentional choices.
Right.
And I feel like if we take out the dark-skinned nature and the Dravidian language element of it, we've lost a lot of this symbolism. Like,
yeah.
certainly a lot of this casteism is still there because we're still kind of, like, upholding this hierarchy.
Right.
And also, we've gotten rid of a lot of what that hierarchy considers to be its lower level and not pointed at it and said, this is evil. Because when you think, like, the villains of the movie that stand out are Balal Deva and his crew. Like,
exactly.
They're the real villains of this plot. So
yeah.
why introduce this whole other thing that doesn't make sense?
Right. To take out the problematic things does not alter or impact the plot
yep.
in any
right.
way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just like food for thought.
Yeah. Food to carry with us and continue chowing down on as we watch the second one.
Yeah, and it does, it's interesting because based on those, it seems like the what we would recognize as racism is maybe more prominent in the first one.
Yeah.
And then it's maybe more clearly casteism in this sequel. So yeah, we will see.
We'll keep an eye out for those things. So I appreciate kind of having that pointed out in advance so we can kind of, mm-hmm, kind of see how some of those things play out.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, well, I actually think us talking about, like, the future of the franchise being, you know, we're going to be watching the second one next, is also, mm-hmm, a good transition into general Indian news. I have three pieces of news, in contrast, ooh, to past weeks where I've had none. The first of which is that it has been confirmed that there will be a Bahubali 3.
Interesting. What's it going to, yes, be called? The resurrection?
The continuation? The psych, the we gotcha.
Yeah.
The not so much conclusion. Yeah. It's like the Douglas Adams books where it's like the fourth book in the trilogy and then it's the fifth book in the increasingly poorly named trilogy. And yeah.
Yes. Anyway.
But yeah, so the release date is TBD. It's in development. Both Rajmouli and Prabhas, who is confirmed to return, are doing other things right now. So no idea when they're going to even get started on this thing, but it's going to happen.
That's exciting. So here's, yes, his chance. Here's the chance to make a totally non-problematic,
please,
Bahubali.
Please. I'd love to
see.
We'll see. I also wanted to share that Ranveer released, well, he didn't release, but a trailer was released of a movie that Ranveer is in, a new movie called Durandar, which looks like a very intense, like, gritty action drama.
Cool.
It does look cool. He's got very long hair. And the supporting cast also looks great. We've got Sanjay Dutt. We've got Arjun Rampal, who was the villain in many SRK movies that we love. Rawan and Om Shanti Om and Dawn. And then Akshay Khanna from Dil Chahta Hai is also in it.
That's fun.
Yeah, so that's going to be a good time.
I'm into that.
And then, moving away from the movie news, I just wanted to share, this is something that happened like a couple weeks ago, well, several weeks ago at the time that you're listening to this, but back in June, the High Court in Andhra Pradesh made a landmark ruling that trans women are women, reaffirming their right to equal protection under the law.
Good.
Reading from an article from the website Gender GP, quote, a trans woman born male and later transitioning to female is legally entitled to recognition as a woman, the ruling stated. Denying such protection by questioning their womanhood amounts to discrimination. This, yes, decision affirms a simple yet powerful truth. Trans women are women, and their gender identity is valid and worthy of full legal recognition and protection. It also sends a strong message that the law cannot be used to erase trans identity or deny trans people the same rights and protections afforded to cisgender people.
Good.
Yep.
It feels really good to have a win.
It absolutely does.
You know, like, when it feels like everything is just getting worse, it feels really good,
yep,
to see something get better.
Yes, I completely agree. Yeah, just, I felt really happy when I saw that headline. I felt it needed to be celebrated, and especially because it happened in June. And
yeah,
just
very apt. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's
so
amazing.
That's it. That's my info.
Thank you for that news. That was a nice follow-up to Bahubali, but also Bollywood stuff.
Yeah.
And also Indian stuff.
Indian stuff. Yeah.
So, pluggables. Mm-hmm. Follow us at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Do what you do there. Mm-hmm. I haven't updated it in a little while, but I am going to do it.
We don't always do what we do there, but you do what you do there.
Yes, yes. And if that's nothing, great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I identify with that strongly. Also, consider subscribing to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. You could even consider leaving a rating or review. Mm-hmm. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
Indeed. And join us on YouTube and Spotify, where we keep our Bollywood bangers playlists and add the songs that we love from the movies that we watch to those playlists. I think we're going to add all three of the songs from Bahubali the Beginning to that playlist.
I think we should.
Because why the heck not?
The music is so good.
The music is rad. But if you want to listen along to those, you can join us via the links that are in our episode descriptions as well as in our Instagram posts. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's always a good time.
Yes.
Yeah, next week we're watching the poorly named conclusion.
Yeah, now we know it's not actually the conclusion.
I also just saw on IMDb that there is apparently like a TV series that was on Amazon.
Yeah, the animated one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I think we can pretty clearly state that our director and our cast are the same.
Are the same, yes. The plot description on IMDb is... Amarendra Bahubali, the heir apparent to the throne of Mahishmati, finds his life and relationships endangered as his adoptive brother, Balaldeva, conspires to claim the throne. And then wow. It goes on to talk more about what Shiva's up to, but I'm just going to leave it there.
Yeah, if you leave it there, I'll pick up with the Netflix synopsis, which is, to avenge his father's death, a young man leads an army into battle against a cruel tyrant in this conclusion to the historic saga. But it's not a conclusion.
I do think that's really funny. Like, don't confidently call your movie a conclusion if you then plan to make a third one. And I get that it's like years later, but still.
Yeah. I'm excited.
I'm also excited. I look forward to there being less sexism. And I look forward to pointing out more problematic things about S.S. Rajmouli, because I've been finding that I enjoy that. And I'm excited to get to look at Prabhas more.
And more Prabhas.
Yep.
Prabhas.
Boss. Prabhas. Prop boss.
Prop boss. Prop boss.
If I were like the prop master on a television show or something, I would want to be known as the prop boss.
Yeah. It's like Shah Rukh being like, what, the king of thrills? Or just bringing thrills?
Thrills provided by, or, yeah.
Uh-huh. Anyway.
Anyway.
This has been fun. And I'm sure it'll continue to be fun.
I hope so.
So until next time, remember, Bollywood and Tollywood and really every film industry of India doesn't need us.
Nope.
But we need all of them.
We do. And even when... it's just to point out problematic things. It's still a good time.
Yeah.
Problematic. Yeah.
Well, but we don't want him to be. No, he's not problematic.
No, we don't. No, he's not.